Now I want to share a commentary. I voted for Ralph Nader. I never bring people on this radio program because I'm going to vote for him. The only people I've ever brought on are people who would qualify as independent and progressive in their platforms. And more than anything, I want the platform to be the emphasis. If we begin to put before the public what the real issues are, what the solutions are, and how, if we stick with a corporate Democrat Republican left-right charade, we will never get a single progressive platform on. And if there is ever one that is, it's almost always where the mainstream has compromised someone in order to get one of that person's platforms initiated into their platform, but later that is always dropped and they go the other direction now that they have the person's endorsement or support. Here's what reason minds should have understood. Always look at the likely outcome of the choices you're making. Now, this is true of everything in life, but there seems to be this black hole in the ideologies that we live by that we never look far enough to see the likely outcome. Like, we're not looking right now at where does ISIS come from. Well, anyone who does homework knows that ISIS was created by what we did. We funded the so-called moderates in Afghanistan to fight the Russians. They were the Mujahideen. Then we funded the moderates in Libya, and they became ISIS, and they were controlled by Al-Qaeda. And now we've been funding moderates in Jordan, Turkey, and Syria, and they are ISIS. So it doesn't matter whether one cuts off your head as a show of their power, or one takes 250 soldiers into the desert in their underwear and just shoots them, the outcome is still the same. They will say that they're doing something in the name of their religion. It has nothing to do with religion. It has to do with their politics, control, and power, and then the propaganda. So we create a perpetual war that drains us, kills Americans and other people around the world, and no one looks at, was this likely to happen? The answer is yes. It was inevitable. There's a little story I'll tell you. Near the end of the Vietnam War, at least after the 1973 accords were signed in Paris, where the fighting stopped on both sides, which it did, then the Americans withdrew all the troops, which they did. But they left behind about 7,000, more or less, advisors and people to run the embassy, which was one of the largest embassies out in the world that we had. But also we were, our CIA and all of our naval and special force operations were still working with the Vietnamese military and a lot of business people. That's what we left behind. But we happened to have put an ambassador in place there whose own son had been killed in the Vietnam War, and he was a super hawk patriot. And so he saw that we had to stay there virtually forever until there was a just peace where the North and the South were two completely separate entities. So when all the troops left Ho Chi Minh gave the command, and they marched down. And because there were no Americans there, it was easy for them to take over all of the other bases. Da Nang fell quickly. So when it was clear, with months to go, that South Vietnam would be overrun, all the advisors are telling this person, the ambassador, we have to leave. We have to get the people. It's easy for us to get the Americans who work here out. That's easy. But what about the 150,000 Vietnamese who've been working with us in our intelligence agencies, translators, interrogators, at every level, and their families? That's 500,000 people. We have a 500,000 people we have to get out of here because they'll be killed as collaborating with the enemy. Nothing. He didn't want to acknowledge this. He didn't want to look ahead. And he kept this up until just a week before. So when literally the Saigon was being surrounded and the airport closed down and the ocean, the rivers closed down, then and only then did he put into motion that we have to do something. But by then, all they could do is helicopters. And so they got about 75,000 total people by boats out and by helicopters out. But that meant that an awful lot, about 375,000 people that work for the United States, were left behind. And many were killed. Others were sent to rehabilitation camps for years or longer, like decades. In any case, it was just an example of what happens when you're in a conflict and you don't look ahead. You don't look at the unintended and as well as intended consequences. So they should have taken a look carefully at the background of the candidates that were running and said, what has this person done in their life politically? And what is the likely outcome that they would have the strength to go forward honoring all of the citizens of the United States, not just the corporate interest? That wasn't done. Hence the following. If Ralph Nader had won the 1996 presidential campaign against Bill Clinton, Dole and Ross Perot, there would never have been NAFTA and GATT, trade deals that took jobs, 1.3 million jobs away from the United States, caused Mexico 2 million jobs, mainly farming, and started the dissemination of U.S. manufacturing. That is when we began to offshore at a rapid level American jobs and factories. That's when the equity partnerships, that's when the venture capitalists came in, would buy a factory, move its operations to China or India or Bangladesh, and then fire all the people. That wouldn't have happened. Today, we have lost over 30 million jobs because of companies being bought and outsourced, downsized, or changed, merely for the profit of those in power. Ralph Nader would not have allowed that to happen. GATT, he would have allowed. Without GATT, there would have been no founding of the World Trade Organization, a completely criminal organization that has enabled developing nations to capitalize on raping poor nations and protecting corporate interests against consumer protection throughout the world. Worker wages would have increased in part because unions would have been strengthened. Instead, with GATT and the World Trade Organization, workers' wages decreased and unions were eviscerated. Isn't it ironic that on the left, the arrogance, the unbridled, you can almost not talk with them, they're so arrogant. They claim they're pro-union, and yet virtually everything they've done has been to destroy the unions. And yet they will proudly say we're union. Well, since when? Do a little homework. The Glass-Steagall Act would not have been repealed, which ultimately led to the 2008 financial collapse and will contribute to the future bursting of bubbles still on the horizon. Citizen savings and savings loan banks, including home mortgages, would be safe today and not victim to crazed speculative bankers, hedge funds, and financial cowboys and bandits. The Commodity Future Modernization Act, which legalized over-the-counter derivatives, which are viewed purely as weapons of economic destruction, would not have been authorized. Today we have over $100 trillion just in the United States. And we, the American consumer, are on the hook for 90% of the payback if they go bad. We don't get a penny of the rewards. We pay 90% of the loss. Having reined in Wall Street and big banks, there would have been no need for Occupy Wall Street. A Nader administration would have already occupied it. You wouldn't have had the Glass-Steagall Act, which FDR put in place to keep the casino banks that are speculators and selfish and from the savings loan banks. The doctrine of sustainable equivalence that has become the leading superstition to approve genetically modified foods would have been forced into a strict scientific review and likely repealed as scientifically unsound and false. Hence, you would have had no GMO foods today. And hence, no need for March Against Monsanto or me to do Seeds of Death, the documentary. Nader would not have reneged on America's early promise between Daddy Bush and Gorbachev. NATO would not advance to Russia's borders, as is happening today. The U.S. would not meddle in Russia's internal affairs. And since NATO would not side with NATO expansionism, there would be no fascist government in Ukraine today. Also, Clinton was complicit in not stopping genocide. Nader would have done everything possible to stop it, including, by the way, as we all know, anyone who's actually studied, as I have meticulously studied with great scholarship, everything about Rwanda, you will find that one person, and that is the former head military from the United Nations, a Canadian, was there, and he knew where the weapons were that were going to be used. He communicated with the UN that he was going to go in and destroy the whole cache of weapons. He was told to stand down. When they were going to take hostages, he had gotten a tip on it, and he knew he could get the hostages out of harm's way, the Belgians. He was told to stand down. They killed all 10 of those hostages, and that's what caused all the other nations to remove their troops. When the 2,400-plus church members were hiding in a church, and the last of the Belgian forces and Italian forces left, he said he was going to go in there and replace them to prevent their slaughter. He was told to stand down. So he and his soldiers had to watch 2,500 Tutsis being chopped to pieces. And the horrors go on. Multiple times he could have stopped the genocide. Every single time, because of the Clinton White House and State Department and the UN, he was told to stand down. Little part of history. Ralph Nader would never have stood down. Rwanda would have stopped. Also, I believe that Nader would have dealt with Bosnia differently through diplomacy and sanctions before use of military action. Also, he would have vetoed the Defense of Marriage Act that prevented the LGBT community from marriage. Clinton signed a blow against the LGBT rights movement. Much greater progress in solving the two-state crisis between Israel and Palestine would have commenced, and Nader would likely have reduced the influence of the pro-Israeli lobby. There would be no green revolution spearheaded by Monsanto to industrialize American agriculture, rather than giving a green light to chemical companies to poison soil and crops with ever more toxic chemicals. Greater regulation of pesticide safety would be implemented. Although the Clinton administration is credited with the U.S. longest economic expansion, the highest rate of home ownership, lowest unemployment rate in 30 years, and the smallest welfare rolls in 35 years, lowest poverty rates and highest incomes, Nader would have improved on this far more by lessening the income inequality gap. These figures would reflect more the economic improvements of the average citizen rather than the privileged elite that Clinton kowtowed to. Nuclear power plants would be completely decommissioned. We wouldn't have a single nuclear power plant in the United States. He would have closed them all. Clinton wanted to expand them because Clinton, Ron Emanuel, and Clinton's contacts, I should say it was Obama's Ron Emanuel, but Clinton was connected directly to the largest manufacturers of nuclear power in the United States. Private funding of elections would be banned, which would have prevented the electoral debacles in the succeeding elections and the influence of corporate fascists such as the Koch brothers and also George Soros. Federal funds for public media and broadcasting would be strictly for public interest and not the interests of private corporations. They would be completely reformed to serve the needs for which they were originally founded. All the federal health agencies, the Health and Human Services, CDC, and FDA, would be reconstructed to break the widespread conflicts of interest with private medical industries and big pharma to assure that only the safest drugs, medical devices, diagnostics, and cheaper prices are approved to best serve America's health. The two-party duopoly dictating all policy in this nation would have been broken, and the U.S. would have moved to a greater democratic representation with the inclusion of third parties into the legislative process. There'd be strict bans on the privatization of any resources upon which human life depends. If Nader had won the 2000 presidential campaign against Bush and Gore, it would have been also different. If people believed the argument that the U.S. government was behind 9/11, then certainly there would have been a complete review, and there would have been no 9/11 if the government was behind it, and that is merely speculative, if Nader were president. If people believe the official commission report that al-Qaeda affiliated Muslim terrorists hijacked airplanes and crashed them into the buildings, then although there would have been direct military action against al-Qaeda cells and attempts to capture bin Laden, there would not have been an aggressive militarization regime change in Afghanistan. Yes, destabilization of the Taliban rulership, but no to turning Afghanistan into a puppet vassal of the U.S. There would have been no invasion of the Iraq area to oust Saddam Hussein, which has cost us $3 trillion and will go as high as $5 trillion. There would have been no ISIS in Iraq today. There would have been no civil unrest between Sunni and Shia, since there would not have been a declared war on terrorism. There would not have been a Patriot Act, a Homeland Security Department, no National Defense Authorization Act, no need for a massive and insane private intelligence surveillance program, nor a private military-industrial complex that has taken over U.S.'s foreign policy. A large reduction in the Department of Defense budget by scrapping useless military projects, reducing forces and bases overseas, and reform the military into a defensive rather than offensive force. We would not have assassinations of American or any other citizens without due process. We would have our complete constitutional rights intact. You would have all of your amendments held sacred, having aggressively sought a peace resolution between Israel and Palestine and restricting Israel lobbying in the halls of Washington. There would be no justification for Gazans to elect Hamas. Hence, you would not have Hamas in power. There would not have been a government-subsidized hydrofracking boom, nor indiscriminate subsidies to other fossil fuel industries. There would have been no such thing as clean coal or clean nuclear power. Government energy investments would parallel that of other developed nations, such as Germany and Sweden, that are rapidly moving to alternative, clean, renewable, non-fossil fuel energy sources. Rather than following the Bush agenda of rapid deregulation of private industries, Nader would further regulating industries in order to protect consumers from dangerous products, environmental and human health toxic chemicals, and slapping higher fines and imprisonment of corporate executives who intentionally fraud American citizens with hazardous products. Rather than opening public lands to corporate interests, deforestation and mining, greater efforts would be made to protect U.S. wilderness and ecological habitats and even expand them with reforestation programs. Student loans would still be included in the bankruptcy laws rather than now contributing to our current epidemic of student debt slavery. Rather than favor Wall Street and the large multinational corporate regime, Nader would be putting more resources and policies that benefit small businesses. No federal preference would be given to private charter schools, and greater investments would have been made to improve America's public education. Corporate media would be held accountable for deceiving the American public with lies to support their private and political interest. The private prison system would be slowly disbanded or would become so highly regulated and accountable for its actions and predatory pricing on taxpayers that it would no longer be a lucrative industry. Prisons would return to the more cost-effective model of direct public funding, which worked better for decades, and you would have had no more people going to jail because of drugs. Drugs would have been legalized, I believe. Nader, had he won the 2008 presidential election against Barack Obama and John McCain, there would be no Obamacare health program written by the private insurance industry. There would be universal single-payer health care as an expansion of Medicare, which is already socialized medicine. A Supreme Court decision favoring Citizens United ruling corporations have the rights of citizens would have been overruled. Bankers who defrauded the American public that contributed to the global financial crisis would be behind bars. The Glass-Steagall Act would be immediately reinstated, and the Federal Reserve would have been prevented from providing no-interest loans to banks and corporations. higher taxes on corporations, closing all tax loopholes, penalties on offshore accounts to generate higher revenues in the federal system to strengthen American domestic infrastructure, social programs, education, and health care. Ralph Nader would have declared a moratorium on home foreclosures and reformed the predatory lending practices to keep people in their homes. The Federal Reserve would have been immediately audited following the meltdown. Every federal bureaucracy would also be audited and held accountable for its waste of public monies. There would have been an immediate withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan and Iraq. There'd be no invasion of Libya or Syria. The Arab Spring would have evolved on its own volition without U.S. intervention and regime change. The State Department would be a vehicle for statesmanship to develop win-win relationships between nations rather than to expand U.S. economic and military domination. Foreign policy would reflect the best values of the U.S. rather than the corporate interest of Monsanto, U.S. oil companies, and commodity and speculative traders. Ralph Nader would have kept Obama's false promise to keep America's food safe and truly organic. Now, that is what I believe, but from all that I know of this man, that's what he would have represented. Here's what Ralph Nader actually did. This is his actual record. Without being a politician, without holding a political office, he was able to achieve what no human being in American history has achieved, not even Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, or Abraham Lincoln. Here's what he achieved. This is actual legislation. National Automobile and Highway Traffic Safety Act, Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Co-op Bank Bill, Law Establishing the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, Consumer Product Safety Act, the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, the Mine Health and Safety Act to help coal miners, the Whistleblowers Protection Act, Medical Devices Safety Act, the Nuclear Power Safety Act, the Mobile Home Security Act, Consumer Credit Disclosure Law, the Pension Protection Law, the Funeral Home Cost Disclosure Law, the Tire Safety and Grading Disclosure Law, the Wholesome Meat Act, the Natural Gas Pipeline Safety Act, the Federal Coal Mine Health and Safety Act, the Wholesome Poultry Product Act, the Occupational Safety and Health Act, the OSHA, Safe Water Drinking Act, the Freedom of Information Act, the National Traffic and Motor Safety Act. Here, and that's just some. And here are some of the organizations that Ralph Nader either founded or co-founded. The American Antitrust Institute, the Appleseed Foundation, the Arizona Center for Law and the Public Interest, the Aviation Consumer Action Project, Buyers Up, Capitol Hill's New Service Center for Concerned Engineering, Center for Auto Safety, the Center for Insurance Research, the Center for Justice and Democracy, the Center for Justice and the Public Interest, the Center for Study of Responsible Law, the Center for Women Policy Studies, Citizens Action Group, Citizens Advocacy Center, Citizens United Utility Board, Citizens Work, the Clean Water Action Project, Clearinghouse for Professional Responsibility, Congress Project, Congress Watch, Congress Accountability Project, the Connecticut Citizen Action Group, Consumer Protection on Technology, Corporate Accountability Research Group, the Critical Mass Energy Project, Democracy Rising, Disability Rights Center, Equal Justice Foundation, Essential Information, Fight to Advance the Nation's Sports, Fishermen's Clear Water Action Group, the Foundation for Taxpayers and Consumer Rights, the Freedom of Information Clearinghouse, Global Trade Watch, Government Purchasing Project, Health Research Group, Litigation Group, Multinational Monitor, National Citizens Coalition for Nursing Home Reform, the National Coalition for Universities in the Public Interest, the National Insurance Consumer Organization, the Ohio Public Interest Action Group, Organizations for Competitive Markets, Professional Drivers, Professionals for Auto Safety, Public Citizen, and then Pension Rights Center, the Princeton Project 55, the Prod Truck Safety, Public Citizens Vision Centers, Public Interest Research Groups, the Research Consumption Alliance, Retired Professionals Action Group, Tax Reform Research, and Telecommunications Research Center, plus he co-authored 25 books. No one in American history has ever even come close to doing what he has done in the public interest. Every day of his life that I'm aware of, when he was on point, you could not compromise him, you could not corrupt him, you could not get away with lying to him. He was there for us. If ever we needed someone who is the spirit and the voice of the American public, it was Ralph Nader.